Welcome to History Here and Now. I'm Thomas, the voice inside your podcast machine, and today is a great day to learn about history. The History Here and Now podcast is dedicated to bringing you great stories from the past. Here we talk about people, places, events, culture, and practically every other facet involved with history. Does it sound complicated? Well, history is just that, complicated, but it doesn't have to be. I'm here to help break things down and make history more fun, so let's get started. We continue on with our series of history's worst battles today by looking at the Battle of Solferino, fought in 1859 between the French and Piedmontese armies under Emperor Napoleon III and King Vittorio Emanuele II against Austrians under Emperor Franz Joseph I. Now, today's battle isn't going to be all doom and gloom by discussing some of the horrific conditions that the soldiers were fighting in and the dealt with the wounded afterwards. But there is going to be a little glimmer of hope at the end because there is a tremendous byproduct from what happens in the battle's aftermath. So let's get started on today's talk. Now, the Battle of Solferino was fought during the Second Italian War of Independence. Now, the war's whole geopolitical context, because this being Italy, and Italy having been undergoing numerous wars for independence and for reunification, and there was still significant problems going on with the Austrians at this time that Italy was having to deal with. Now, Solferino, being a key battle in the struggle for the unification of Italy, is more famous today for the horrors of the battlefield carnage, which itself would lead to one of the creation of one of the greatest institutions and laws governing warfare. Now, following the defeat of the first Napoleon, Italy was once more divided between competing states and occupying foreign powers. In the north, Austrians controlled Lombardy and Varentia, and northwestern territories belonged to the House of Savoy, whose kingdom encompassed Sardinia and Piedmont, and could be known as either one of them, and they were also heavily allied with the French. Now, one of Napoleon's most enduring legacies was the kindling of nationalist fervor in many parts of Europe, Piedmont bearing the torch for a unified Italy. Now, sharing this sentiment was the contemporary ruler of France, Napoleon III, who had been in his youth a member of the Carbonari, a quasi-Masonic secret society dedicated to a liberal nationalist agenda of Italy. Now, an initially disastrous effort by Piedmont to wrest control of Lombardy from Austria had led in 1848 to the abdication of Carlo Alberto in favor of his son, Victor Emmanuel II. 10 years later, however, Napoleon III signed a treaty with Piedmont, promising to come to the latter's defense if Austria attacked. The plan was for Piedmont to provoke Austrian aggression, whereupon the Allies would seize Lombardy for Piedmont, which in turn would give up Nice and Savoy to France, and these would be monumental gains. The Piedmontese began mobilizing, and in March 1859, Austrians obligingly threatened retaliation, and a plan was now in motion. Now, the Austrian forces were led personally by military inexperienced 29-year-old Emperor Franz Joseph, and they had two major field armies. French army at Solferino, personally led by their emperor, Napoleon III. Many of its generals were veterans of the French conquest of Algeria and the Crimean War. And although all three combatants were commanded by their monarchs, each was seconded by professional soldiers. According to the Allied battle plan formulated on the 24th of June, the Franco-Sardinian army moved east to deploy along the right banks of the river Mincina. Now, the French were to occupy the villages of Solferino, Cavriana, Guizzozio, and Midole. This battle is almost like a series of three battles, because they're all trying to control these three villages along the river. Unfortunately, the logistical and organizational abilities of the French military failed to live up to the grandiose ambitions of the French emperor. Napoleon III ordered his troops to cross the Alps into Piedmont without bothering to make sure they even had some of the necessary equipment. When Marshal Conrobert, the general in charge of the expedition, arrived at Lyon on April 23rd to take command, He found the order to cross the frontier waiting for him. Alongside it was a telegram from the commander of his advance guard complaining, quote, "The troops of my division are without blankets. It is cold. We have neither tents, nor water bottles, nor camp equipment, nor cartridges. There is no hay. Absolutely nothing necessary for the organization of a division has been sent here." Colonel Barrett, in return, complained to the French War Ministry, only to receive a telegram from the Emperor himself stating, quote, "I repeat my order that the frontier is to be crossed forthwith." Now, fortunately for the Allies, the Austrian army was equally poorly prepared for modern war. Everyone was still adhering to battlefield tactics from the Napoleonic War era. Now, the particular note at this battle, there was very poor reconnaissance and intelligence ability of the opposing armies. Now, despite they had this now novel ability of balloon reconnaissance and using telegraph for communications, but still, neither side had any idea of the immediate presence of one another until it was pretty much the last minute. Now, the Austrian field commander, Field Marshal Friedrich Wilhelm, initially enjoyed great superiority in numbers and should have taken the initiative by crushing the Piedmontese army before the French arrived. He failed to do so, instead falling back in the face of the Allied advance and coming off worse in a fierce encounter at Magenta on June 4th. Now, despite their operational incompetence, though, the French were still renowned as the finest soldiers in Europe for their sheer elan, speed, and aggression for making up for any tactical shortcomings. Now, at around 4:30 a.m., advance guards of the 1st Corps under Foy, Dumas, Brazain, and a cavalry division came into contact with the Austrian 5th Corps under Stanichon near the Castiglione d'Estivire. And around 5 a.m., a 2nd Corps and another cavalry brigade encountered Hungarian units posted near Medole. The Austrian forces were almost 3 corps strong, and these are in the tens of thousands of soldiers, and many of the Austrians were able to hold their positions for most of the day. Now, around 3 p.m., French reserves, formed by Colonel Barrett's 3rd Corps and the Imperial Guard, attacked the next point at Cavrianum, which was defended by the Austrian 1st Corps. And they finally occupied it by 6 p.m. and breaking through the Austrian center. The breakthrough then forced a general retreat of the Austrian armies. This was a well-supporting network of fortresses, and the Austrian Emperor Franz Joseph, instead of letting the Allies attack fortifications position of strength, the Emperor was swayed by rash counsel, and he took the offensive. These were two colossal armies, 120,000 Austrians with 500 cannon, and 130,000 French and Piedmontese with 400 cannon. These were two massive armies about to slam into each other. This was all on the early morning of June 24th, all moving forward to take positions up on high ground around the village of Solferino. Now, still, there was neither side really seemed to know what they were doing. Even earlier that day, at around 7 a.m., there was morning, and a messenger brought them news that Napoleon III was moving his headquarters. Austrians at first gained the heights. Napoleon decided he would have to strike at the center of their line to force the break apart, something we had alluded to earlier. This entire battle that ensued combined the medieval ferocity of hand-to-hand combat with the explosive violence of machine-age warfare. Now, present at the Allied headquarters in the village of Castiglione was the Swiss businessman Henri Dunant. His account, a memoir of Solferino, graphically depicts the horror and carnage of the battle. He writes, quote, "The Austrians from their vantage points on the hills swept the French with artillery fire and rained on them with a steady hail of shells, case, and grape shot. Facing the thunder of these batteries, roaring and spitting forth death upon them, the French rushed forward like an opposing storm sweeping from the plain to attack the positions where they were determined to secure. Every mound, every height, every rocky crag is the scene of a fight to the death. Bodies lie in heaps on the hills and in the valleys, and no quarter is given. It is the sheer butchery. A struggle between savage beasts, maddened with blood and fury. Even the wounded fight to the last gasp. When they had no weapons left, they seize their enemies by the throat and tear them with their teeth." The whole battle was a particularly grueling one. There was over 9 hours of combat, resulting in almost 2,300 Austrian troops being killed, over 10,000 wounded, 8,000 missing. And the Allied French and Sardinian armies also leaving with over 2,000 killed, 12,000 wounded, and 2,000 captured or missing. There were also widespread reports of wounded and dying soldiers being shot or bayoneted on both sides, which adding this to its horror. The sheer ferocity of the entire French assault eventually drove the Austrians back, and after a day of desperate fighting and intense heat, the battle closed around 5 p.m. The Austrians withdrew and eventually agreed a peace deal with the French that more or less realized the Allied war aims. Now, Piedmont was significantly enlarged, and the process by which Italy would be united under the House of Savoy was irreversibly set in motion. Now, this doesn't signal just the end of the battle's legacy. Despite being a horrifying conditions and tactical blunders, making this only the worst battle, it's also one of the most galling battles that sets in motion the creation of one of the most respected organizations that we see today. Durant, the end of the battle simply marked the start of a new horror, the appalling inadequacy of provision for dealing with the estimated 40,000 casualties. Organizational logistical deficiencies of the French military meant that there were not dedicated medical or ambulance units, let alone a sufficient medical supplies, but that there was barely a drop of water or a crumb of food for the exhausted and suffering soldiers. In fact, there's a account at this time saying that the French army actually employed more veterinarians than they did doctors because they wanted to repair the horses rather than the soldiers. Durant describes one horrific but typical scene where he says, quote, "The harassed cavalrymen return to throw themselves on the ground and sleep all night without having taken any nourishment. As they made their way back, they again passed many wounded men crying out for water. A Tyrolean lying near the bivouac kept calling to them there was no water to give him. The next morning they found him dead, with his mouth full of earth and foam on his lips. His swollen face was green and black, and he had been writhing in fearful convulsions. The nails on his clenched hands were twisted backwards." Now, Durant organized volunteers in a relief effort at Castiglione, paying for supplies out of his own pocket. Now, but the scenes themselves that he witnessed stirred him to propose a much grander scheme. He wanted to put together an organization that would simply be for the relief of people's suffering. Now, he led themselves on a campaign that eventually resulted in what we see today as the Geneva Conventions and formal establishment of the International Red Cross. Eventually, his proposals on the Geneva Convention would establish some of the first rules of conduct for warfare, for the treatment of prisoners, for the treatment of the wounded, and setting standards on hygiene and cleanliness, all of which stemming from one of the most horrific battles of the 19th century. So I really hope you enjoyed that episode. The content for today's episode was taken from the book entitled History's Worst Battles and the People Who Fought Them, written by Joel Levy. If you want to learn more about some of history's worst battles, be sure to check out his latest book. History Here and Now is a website dedicated to the research and writing about different historical topics. And if you like this podcast, hit the like button, share it on social media, recommend it to your friends, families, and colleagues, and anyone you think would enjoy hearing a good history discussion. You can follow History Here and Now on Twitter and check back periodically for the next episode. And until then, good luck, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.